Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and welcome to Chicago's Morning Answer, where we do body count on the sevens.
And we'll give you an accurate body count, or at least we will try, because if you watch every single news outlet, radio, newspaper, CNN, everyone has a different number. This morning it was 40 on CNN, you know, about 3 o'clock this morning, they were saying 40 shot, but I believe ABC7, they said 63 shot and 10 dead in gun violence that began on Friday and ended this morning.
Yeah, I was kidding.
What number are you going with?
Because this isn't a numbers game. I don't like the statistics, but that's what it's become. It's like traffic and the weather when you talk about 10 people being murdered over the weekend, 63 human beings being shot.
The youngest one is 11 years old.
And we're going to have Greg Livingston on the show at the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. He's the organizer of the Lakeshore Drive. Yeah. Shut down from last week, and the news out that they're maybe planning to do another shutdown towards the on the Kennedy at the entrance to O'Hare Airport, trying to disrupt traffic going into O'Hare.
Oh, really? Couldn't get a runway? So they're going to start there, and then if that one doesn't work, they're going to subject themselves maybe to that runway that you always talk about.
No, I don't think so, because I think there's a recognition that playing games at airports results in terrorism charges. And then you go bye-bye for a long time. So I don't think that's good. That's the play, which is why they're talking about, you know, another arterial that people actually care about getting to the airport.
The scene Sunday morning was insane outside of Cook County Hospital, Stroger Hospital, because all people wanted to know if their loved ones were dead or alive. And so it was also opportunity, Dan, for politicians to get out there. You know, Congressman Danny Davis. Congressman Danny Davis.
Don't do enough to control the flow of guns, especially automatic weapons.
Especially out of where?
Especially automatic weapons.
Oh, yeah.
And Alderman Walter Burnett, he couldn't miss his time in the spotlight.
It affects the whole community.
Oh, there's a longer bite there somewhere. But anyway, it was just amazing to me. So you have these families, and then things got a little testy. And the cops came to make sure everybody was okay, but there was hundreds of people there wanting to know what happened to their loved ones. If they made it through the night, if they survived the gunshot wound, or if they didn't. It was so sad. I mean, this is so depressing that I want to laugh about it so that you don't cry. 8 shot at a block party in Lawndale. 5 shot in Gresham. Most of the shootings happened in the 6th, 10th, and 11th districts.
7 hours on overnight on Saturday, and during those 7 hours, 40 shot, 4 fatally. It was the Tribune reporting Saturday, and then they had to cobble together all the data from the weekend to get you your 63 and 10. And I understand Greg Livingston understands that these marches are not going to reduce violence. But maybe instead of seeing a Trump Penn sign, you know, Trump Pence must go at some of these protests, shutdown marches, the rhetoric from the Pauls you heard, the Danny Davises and the Walter Burnetts, who you don't hear from, the actual people in charge, because those two clowns aren't in charge of anything.
Well, Mayor Emanuel, they talked to, who is at their opening of the east side of the river. There's this new $10 million push to regentrify the Riverwalk. And so they asked him about the shootings. And this is what he said.
On Wednesday, we announced a number of businesses that were going to be part of the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund that create the most important part of our neighborhood economy. But we together have to work as a city. We have a challenge, and it requires all of us, not just our police officers.
Because he said we need jobs, Dan. That's why the shooting rate is up so high. We don't have enough jobs.
We have a challenge. How would you describe 5,000 dead, 20,000 shot in your watch, Mayor? There's no doubt we have a challenge. We have to work together on that. Boy, it's sort of dispassionate considering the magnitude of the problem, I'd suggest. Jim in Crown Point, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
You know, you ought to take everybody that's been shot, since there's a controversy of how many actually have been shot, put them all in Grand Park, and then take a picture of them from the air, and then we can get an accurate count, because that's where you go to get accurate counts.
Okay, thanks for the call, Jim. How about turning Grand Park into a triage center so you actually see it?
Yeah, they almost say it's so many shootings at Stroger that they had to divert some to Northwestern Memorial.
So let's talk about who's not being protested, who's not being talked about. You know, the people in charge. Yeah, Tiny Dancer, they ask him a question. That's not being talked about. Greg Livingston and his group calling him to resign. Well, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's at least it's progress. It's better than flacking for him the way that Flager does. Flager the flack. Manuel, Madigan, Cullerton, Burke, Daly before Emanuel, of course. They have conferred to themselves, I would argue, generational wealth. Generational wealth by being producers of generational death. Is that fair? Madigan, Burke, Cullerton, Tiny Dancer, Daly. You can add to the list because there are a lot of accomplices. Those insiders who built the public housing warehouses, mm-hmm. who benefit from the oversight of Abuse Inc., the K-12 detention centers in Chicago. They've conferred on themselves generational wealth by producing generational death. And where are the protests that focus in on the actual power structure in the city, rather than the myopic, brain-dead Chicago press corps that just sticks a microphone in any Chicago politician's face they can find so they get the pro forma response as to how concerned they are about the carnage du jour of the day or the weekend. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line.
Well, they weren't blaming the weather, which they normally do. They said, no, this doesn't have anything to do with the weather. This has to do with too many guns. Here's your little Tiny Dancer.
We have way too many guns on the street and not enough values.
Yeah, right.
Not enough values.
Yeah,
too many.
Here
we go, talking about values.
It's the same old, same
people
old.
People don't value life.
So I'm not interested in regurgitating their talking points. We've been hearing them for generations. I get it. They think gun bans and the barometric pressure are the two issues. Well, they're not. And also, every single person, every single dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, all your church-going friends there in Lakeview, Amy, mm-hmm. what do you have to say? You want to talk about robber barons and racists, oligarchs and barbarians? What do you have to say about those who've been in charge of the city for the last 100 years to present? What do you have to say?
They're doing a god-awful job. I could say that. They won't. They'll still blame the guns.
Well, I know, but I want to hear from them. 100 years. 100 years. Robber barons and oligarchs, barbarians. Which is the more racist policy in terms of impact? Some half-assed tweet by some half-assed celebrity? Or the policies pushed by the Chicago Democrat power structure in this state?
Some argued that, just back to this unbelievable amount of shootings, that it's because all the police officers were at Lollapalooza and not in their assigned districts, that might have played a part as well.
Yeah, you know, this people who have no historical context. Let me repeat. 5,000 dead, 20,000 shot, round numbers in Tiny Dancer's tenure. This isn't 63 shot and 10 dead. This is unique. No, it's been going on for years and years and years. So don't give me, and I'm not talking at you, I'm talking through you to them. Don't give me the bull jive about, let me analyze why it happened this weekend. We can talk about what happened to police. We can talk about the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, which has instituted a new nobody goes to jail policy.
Superintendent Eddie Johnson speaking with the media at 10 a.m. this morning.
Yeah.
I hope they ask him some hard questions.
Yeah. We got guns and, we're doing the best we can. We got to work together. Blah, blah, blah. Hopefully, you know, it'll cool off and cooler heads will prevail.
People start respecting other people's boundaries.
Yeah, yeah.
We want values back.
Yeah, we got to get jobs. We got to, you know, teach kids how to read and write and critically think.
School starts and we got the Bud Billiken Parade.
We're
going
to talk about all the things that we don't do. We're going to talk about all the things that we wish we did, that we wish we could just snap our fingers and they would occur, and we don't do anything substantive in furtherance of achieving. That's what we're going to do. And we'll trot Eddie Johnson out there because he's a superintendent and he's black.
And okay. He grew up here. He knows.
Joe in Crestwood, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, I hate to say it, but this problem will continue to grow and fester for the rest of eternity until we get back to the family unit of a man and a woman raising their children with some sort of value system that doesn't include, hey, I'm pissed off, so let me go shoot someone. And that encompasses all races because it's not just African-Americans who are don't have the nuclear family, but it's all races these days. And until we get back to that, this isn't going away, no matter what the crazy politicians do.
Thanks
it's
for
not going to happen until we, the people, decide, hey, we got to stop this stuff on an individual level, not from some social program, because it's not going to work.
Thanks for the call, Joe. David in McCook.
Hey, good morning, guys. Have you guys noticed the irony? The blacks are out protesting the police. They're also protesting gun violence. What exactly do they want? Is that Whitey's fault, too?
Yeah, thanks for the call, David. Right, we want de-escalation of police with more police present. Okay.
That makes sense.
We'll ask Greg Livingston about that. Dave and Racine.
Yeah, I wonder why there are no protests against what is really causing the problem. You got these de facto Fagans that are cranking out and producing these sociopathic feral humans and are committing violence of all types, not just so-called gun violence. The gun is just a tool that, the rest of it, there are a lot of places that are hot that you don't see the same kind of uptick in violence. Phoenix is really hot. I haven't seen any mass shootings in there, and they have open carry and things like that.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Dave.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan, I know you love your White Sox. What's their record this year?
They've closed. They're just 20 and a half games out of first place, so they're closing on the Indians.
It's really heating up. Well, if you're New York Mets fans, there's help. Remember they lost to the Nationals 25-4. They have the fifth worst record in Major League Baseball, tied for last place in the NL East. Well, a mental health marketing place is giving them free confidential therapy to help them. So what you have to do is go online, tell them about your most difficult moment as a fan, and they'll come to your
helping the fans, not the players.
Oh, they're helping the fans.
Yeah, should try helping the players.
Yeah, the team is 44-63 out.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Hall of Fame weekend in Canton, Ohio, where one number 54, middle linebacker for the Chicago Bears, Brian Urlacher, inducted.
Well deserved. And the bust of him, he was bald, and I don't think Restore Hair or whatever that's called appreciates it.
Yeah, the big question about Jim Thome, which jersey? Big question about Brian Urlacher, which hair?
Hair or no hair. But they had the bald, the player one. It's good that they gave it its original look.
Now, he goes in with Ray Lewis, Randy Moss, Brian Dawkins. A lot of speechifying. Ray Lewis, one of my favorite parts, during Ray Lewis's speech when he said, "I still kiss my kids on the mouth."
A little creepy.
And they pan to his kids, and they all are shaking their heads saying, no, he doesn't.
No, he doesn't.
No, he's not kissing me on the mouth. That was pretty good. And then doing the squirrel dance with Jonathan Ogden was pretty good, too, among some more bizarre moments where I didn't really know what the hell Ray Lewis was talking about, and I don't think anybody else did either. But our guy, Brian Urlacher, I thought afforded himself really well. I thought he gave a really genuine speech, and he started out striking the right tone. What you're supposed to do at an event like that is thank all those who made it possible.
I'm primarily here tonight to pay respect to the men and women who have made this all possible and to honor them for the impact they've had on my life.
And there were several moments where it was tough for him to keep it together.
I love everything about football. The friendships, the coaches, the teammates, the teachers, the challenges, the opportunity to excel as a teammate and as a leader. Football has provided me with virtually everything I have in life. It has provided for my children and my family. Not yet.
No, he didn't thank the McCaskies.
I don't want to watch it answer to, I'm going to cry. Oh, he didn't?
He
what
didn't
about Virginia?
He didn't, say I like the... No, he did actually mention Virginia McCaskey and George Halas, but...
Good.
He didn't say I like the owners when he was talking about everything about football.
Well, he said if it wasn't for football, he'd end up in New Mexico working the fields.
Well, that's right. And
not the field, mining. Or,
lumberyard.
Lumberyard.
He did all kinds of jobs, which he talked about, the work ethic that his mom and stepfather instilled in him. He talked about the two things that essentially punctuated his life, football and family.
Two pillars of my life are family and football. Football, integrated with my love of family, has allowed me to fulfill my vision in life, to do and be my very best to the best of my ability at all times.
And about his mom, it's a pretty good story.
This was when my late mother, LaVoida Lynn Leonard, became my real-life hero.
When they moved to New Mexico.
Of course, I had my football heroes that I wanted to emulate and who inspired me. But my mother embodied the truth. A champion does it differently. When we first moved to Lovington, we had nothing. No, that's not true. We had each other. But when we first moved there, my mom didn't have a job. Not to worry, though. My mother was the hardest working person I've ever known. She always found a way to provide for the three of us, even if that meant working three jobs at a time, from cleaning houses to being a grocery store clerk. She was never too proud to take a job if it meant she'd be able to provide for us. Even working 7 days a week, not once did she miss a practice, miss a game, or any school function. She was always there for us, and she made sure we knew that. She was at all of our games. And we knew she was there because she was the loudest person screaming in the crowd. Sometimes embarrassingly so. Most of the time, actually.
Yeah. That's
someday,
what I do.
Someday Peyton and Eli are going to be giving that speech about you.
Well, I don't know about that, but we do have our first football practice today at Amundsen High School.
Mm-hmm.
Had to get size 15 cleats. That's not hard. That's not easy to do.
Big kid, that Peyton.
And then to get other things that guys have that I don't want to discuss.
And we don't want you to discuss them.
I don't want to know.
Are you inspired by
Brian
Urlacher's mom to make sure you're at every single practice?
I'm not going to every single practice. I'm not that mom.
Every
game. Oh, of course I'd be at every game.
Yeah.
Unless I was coaching. And then you have to decide between your real kids and then kids that you've kind of adopted for a season.
It depends.
It's all right.
Who's ever playing better?
Well, I mean.
You have to incentivize your presence.
Yes. Well, we came home early on Saturday. I wanted them to watch this because I've known Brian for a while. We're not close or anything, but he's a really nice guy. He's not one of those athletes who's snobby or thinks so highly of themselves that they can't talk to regular people.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, and you can, I think that comes across. I don't know him, but I think that comes across. And
you
I
would
think,
love him if you met him.
And I think he's...
Not as much as Des Clark, but...
Yeah, well, I'm Des Clark's man. I think it comes across, and I believe him. I was getting to when he talks about where this comes from, his mom, and also I thought it was a real nice tribute to his stepfather, more on his mom and her work ethic.
I began working when I was 12 years old, pushing my lawnmower around town, mowing yards, and later on working in the oil fields of Lovington. I went off to college, a lumberyard in Albuquerque. My mother definitely taught me the importance of learning my way. Mother, thank you. If it wasn't for you, I definitely wouldn't be here today.
And
why did we grind?
I stopped at, I started working at 11. He started working at 12.
Yeah, and you worked as a caddy.
That's right.
Right.
In the oil fields of Wheaton.
Kind of like Lovington, New Mexico, just a little different, you know.
And then his stepfather, this Troy Leonard, who was present, this was nice.
Fortunately for my mother and the three of us, when I was 12, she met the man I considered to be my real dad, Troy Leonard. If my mother wasn't a good enough example of an exemplary work ethic, now I had another one of my stepfather. My dad went to work every day at 5:30 a.m. in the oil fields of Lovington. Not once did he complain. My dad's here tonight. Troy?
I don't think stepdad's good enough credit.
I'm not doing it. I'm not going to do it.
Not going to do
Troy,
it. Not going to cry.
You're not only my father. You're not only
don't
my stepfather.
Don't do it, man. Don't
father.
Do this to me.
Thank you, Dad, for helping a young boy who needed direction and a role model. For coming into our lives when you did.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful
awesome.
Tribute. Yeah.
That's great.
Stand-up guy, marries his mom, three kids. And
yeah, marrying a woman with three boys, that's a lot of work.
Mm.
And he took on the responsibility.
So Brian Urlacher's message to the Chicago Bears fans, you can't leave them out. All those knuckleheads who brave the cold to watch a mediocre team.
To the Chicago Bears, the charter franchise of National Football League history. First, I must acknowledge the fans. I never got a chance to say goodbye. The best fans in the world.
Yeah.
We don't need counseling.
Definitely.
Even when we stunk, they sit in their seats at Soldier Field freezing their butts off every time. And in case you didn't know, our fans love defense.
Yay,
the most
defense.
Coveted position in pro football for a defensive player is to play middle linebacker for the Chicago Bears. Just think about it.
Yeah, and he went through, of course, the pantheon of Chicago Bears middle linebackers. Buckus, who was there.
Oh, good. Well, Ditka.
Good to see him. Ditka was not a middle linebacker.
He wasn't a middle linebacker?
Yeah.
This oh,
just
boy.
In. Yeah, oh. He is in the Hall of Fame as a tight end because that's the position he played.
I mean, a tight end. Of course I meant tight end.
Exactly. Urlacher and how he wants to be remembered.
There it is. As a player, just want to be remembered as a good teammate. That's it. I want to be remembered as a guy who would do anything for his teammates, always go above and beyond for you. To the guys who played with me and the guys who played against me, just know how much I respected the game. I feel like I played it the right way. I had fun when I was out there. I respected opponents as well as my teammates and coaches.
Text 773, Brian Urlacher really lets lionize another absentee father. Well, yeah, he did have the out of wedlocker.
Oh, with Tina Robinson. Or
Bruce Wolf coined that term, I believe.
What was it?
Out of wedlocker.
Oh. I mean, it was an accident. I mean, maybe it was entrapment on her part.
Well, that son was there. The child was there.
Yeah, the child was there, and he sounded like he's delinquent in child support payments.
I have no idea, but it doesn't seem like he's an absentee father, actually. So let's also give some bandwidth. I didn't make every decision wasn't the best decision I could have possibly made. My 20s and 30s as well, and I wasn't a superstar athlete making millions of dollars, 773. So, you know,
he's doing the right thing. What do you want, abortion? Come on.
Well, why don't you just pull it back a little bit? I appreciate the moment that he provided during his induction ceremony, and also that, you know, perhaps he's grown up a little bit during the last 15 years of playing and now retiring and getting on with the rest of his life with his wife and his kids and all of that. Seeing the kids were there, the wife was there, the players were there. Give the guy some credit. I know we kind of, and I'm guilty of this too, for a good reason, default to being cynical about everything Chicago. But it doesn't mean that's right. I think you watch Brian Urlacher's speech and you see who he recognizes in the audience and how he speaks about people. And I think, you know, if there's criticism of Urlacher during his time here, of course there are. But I thought he afforded himself very, very well in Canton.
You've made the switch. And it feels so good. You switch to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The question, are Trump's tweets on the Fourth Estate a great service to the American people? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. The fake news hates me saying that they are the enemy of the people only because they know it's true. I'm providing a great service by explaining this to the American people, tweeted President Donald J. Trump. Is he right about that? Take your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. In these divisive times, you have to look for points of agreement. And I think one thing we can all agree on as a starting point to try and achieve some consensus to improve the dialogue, make it more constructive. We can all agree that Don Lemon is indeed the dumbest man on television.
Well, on Saturday, President Trump tweeted, LeBron James was just interviewed by the dumbest man on television, Don Lemon.
Yeah.
He made LeBron look smart, which isn't easy to do. I like Mike.
Right. I mean, that, to me, the debate is over with respect to who the dumbest man on television is. And Don Lemon won.
I'm just
trying to find points where everyone can agree.
Don's a human being too. I bet he's
I'm aware.
Very upset.
I'm aware he's a human being.
But yeah. A lot of people were upset. I mean, of course, the left said this is so racist. He's ripping on two African American men. They turned it into a racial issue. I didn't see color when I read that. I just saw this ongoing feud that President Trump has been having with LeBron James, and it's because LeBron James said this about President Trump.
What I noticed over the last few months, that he's kind of used sport to kind of divide us.
Yeah, I like Mike. What about the reference to Michael Jordan? Is that
how does that
fit into the race? But I mean, Bill Simmons, another one of these leftist simps in sports media being an extension of the DC press corps. Yeah, if you don't understand that, then you're not paying attention. LeBron is a smart dude and one of the most thoughtful athletes we have. This is a bull jive tweet and feels more than a little racist. You're a constant embarrassment. Bill Simmons tweeting, Bill Simmons tweeting out to President Trump in response to that tweet. Feels a little racist. I love the modern day Potter Stewarts like Bill Simmons. Feels racist. What, explain the feeling there. You know, and how does the I like Mike part square with your feelings? So anyway, that was one little controversy.
Mike, Michael Jordan responded. He wrote, I support LeBron James. He's doing an amazing job for his community.
Yeah.
Which I think that he is. If you've ever been to Akron, Ohio, the fact that he developed and paid for that I Promise school, good for him. Melania Trump. Her spokesperson came out saying he's working to do good things on behalf of our next generation, and she would welcome a visit to the I Promise school for at-risk children.
Yeah,
she go? I think that would be wonderful if Melania Trump went for a visit.
I Promise school. Here's the other thing you could tweet and the substance of it when you get past the Don Lemon, which you should move past quickly. I Promise school? Well, wait a second. LeBron, as man of the left, why the need for an I Promise school? I mean, you have neighborhood schools.
Right. They're not doing the job, just like some neighborhood schools aren't doing the job in Chicago.
Oh,
but
so.
But I think a lot of athletes are selfish and they don't spend their own money to help their community that they grew up in. And I applaud him for doing what he did.
I'm very, that's great. I want to help LeBron connect the dots. And, you know, those on the left who feel the way that. Simmons does. Is it Simmons or Simons? I haven't seen him on TV in a while. I don't care, so I can't forget the pronunciation, but whatever. What are charter schools? An indictment of the public school system in its centrally planned form that the teachers' unions and the left support without qualification. So the I Promise school, I'm happy. I'm happy he's doing something innovative in the space. Great. You don't have to agree with me to do that. There's a lot of confused liberals in Chicago that support charter schools because they don't understand they're undermining their own position. But I would like to spotlight that part of what LeBron James had to say. Dan in Libertyville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I am very thankful that Trump is calling out the media. For many years, I've been fed up with how they distort the truth, not only in political matters, but also in social matters, like with hands up, don't shoot, and all the nonsense that they reported as to what happened when that police shooting happened, and riots occurred because of their lies. The lies about Trayvon Martin being that little boy, you know, they illustrated him as that football player, about 11 years old, for about 6 months until finally somebody showed the picture of the 6'1" teenager. The way that Bloomberg has its own journalism school to help teach these journalists how to be leftists, it's good that Trump is calling them out, because people want to believe what's printed in their papers and on their computers coming from their media sources, and many times it's distorted or outright unfactual.
Thanks for the call, Dan. Tell you what, to your point, they sometimes those people who want to believe what's not factual continue to believe it even when it's debunked, and then they get a job in the New York Times editorial board. Sarah Jeong, we talked about last week.
Yeah.
And
who hates white men?
The story continues to metastasize. Even Andrew Sullivan now weighing in. Andrew Sullivan, certainly a man of the left, weighing in on Sarah Jeong's tweets over the weekend. More being unearthed.
Why isn't anybody calling her a racist?
Some certainly are.
Well, that's good.
But the idea that this was all of her tweets, all of her tweets were just parodies.
Because she was being trolled, they said, so she was fighting back.
Yeah, that's with farcical tweets. It turns out more digging undermines that case. Also, Sarah Jeong saying, I think it's a little creepy to go back and dig up people's old tweets.
No, it's not.
Oh, really?
Corporations do it every day they interview an employee.
Why don't you tell a couple of current Major League Baseball players about tweets that are 4 and 5 years old and how they've been treated over intemperate tweets from a bygone time period.
One had to go back to the bullpen.
Sarah Jeong?
Jeong.
Yeah. She continued to believe the Rolling Stones rape hoax story even after Rolling Stone disavowed it. I believe Jackie.
Really?
Yeah, she had a long post about it.
The fictitious person is Jackie?
Yeah, even
Jackie doesn't exist.
Rolling Stone disavowed it. They paid out a settlement to UVA. But Sarah Jeong, no, I still believe a person that doesn't exist about a thing that didn't occur. Remarkable.
And she's on their editorial board?
She is.
Ouch.
Andrew Sullivan tweeting over the weekend. Again, man of the left. Leading, one of the leading gay rights activists of the last 30 years. He writes of this thread that was put together of Jeong's tweets. The thread is amazing. Jeong is obsessed by hatred of white people. Hundreds of racist tweets. It's not me saying it. Andrew Sullivan pointing out the obvious. By the way, of course, Jeong has previously attacked Andrew Sullivan. He writes, I'm not calling for the New York Times to fire her, despite her race attacks on white people. Jeong, however, did call for me to be fired for far less. And I agree, by the way, with those who save Sarah. Absolutely do not fire her under any circumstances. Do not advocate for that.
How did she get that job? Oh, that is, it's a mind scratcher. Head scratcher, excuse me.
She should stay there. I don't want to hear a single conservative call for her ouster. The New York Times said they vetted her. They were aware of the tweets, and they were satisfied with her explanation. So let's leave it right there, because she is a representative of the New York Times, the gray lady, the quality of their intellect and journalism. And readership, even though I read the New York Times. But I mean those who are fellow travelers who read the New York Times. This is perfectly reflective. And she has people rallying to her defense, too. Jessica Proas, Huffington Post. Sarah Jeong has a right to be angry. Zhang's anger is merited. An angry Asian person has a right to their rage. This matters because Asian Americans have historically been told that our rage isn't our due. Well, who are you raging against?
Who are they raging against?
Yeah, I mean, this
white man. Well, clearly, because she tweeted about old white men.
Who's the discrimination case filed by Asian American students and Asian American groups against Harvard University? Is that a bunch of white conservatives? Who's discriminating against Asian?
They're flaming liberals.
Who's discriminating against Asian Americans in the California university system, in the Ivy League? Look into Harvard's admissions policies found? They were purposefully lowering the character scores of Asian American applicants to reduce the number they would have to admit. Yeah, you know, they're playing the quota
game.
Not
test scores, but you know, character scores.
Is that racist? Conservatives in charge of the Ivy Leagues? The University of California? The California university system, I should say. Very curious. Very curious, the left. Let's hear from a representative. Philip in Blue Island, you're on Chicago's Morning.
That's pretty nice.
Thank you.
I have to change up. Can I, good morning. Can I hate the KKK?
Yes.
Other white groups without hating all white people?
Yes, you can.
Okay, thank you. The thing about Trump, he's very smart. He already said he can shoot somebody in Manhattan and not lose a vote. So he knows he can use his constituencies to his benefit by putting out tweets about LeBron James, especially if they are borderline racist tweets and saying he's not smart. Don Lemon has achieved a lot. He has a major television show on a major network. He has plenty of awards. I'm sorry.
Don worked hard to get that time slot to have his own show.
For the work assignments he wanted to take, of course.
We talked about that this weekend. Yeah. When Don Lemon worked at Channel 5, there was a shooting, albeit it was a gang shooting in Park Ridge. And he refused to do a gangbanger story. And I even reached out to him. I said, Don, this is Park Ridge. I know you're not from here. Park Ridge is where Harrison Ford is from. More importantly, Hillary Clinton was lived on Vine Street right there. And we don't have a lot of homicides in Park Ridge. It's a big deal. But he refused to do it, so they brought in Phil Rogers, and Phil had to do the story.
Fascinating.
While Don sat in the truck and read a book.
Phil, let me tell you, Philip from Blue Island, let me tell you something else, too. And this goes on the conservative side, too. I don't know how to break this to you. You do not have to be intelligent to have a show on a cable network, and a cable TV network.
But you don't have to be dumb either.
You don't have to be dumb.
Well, okay,
you just are some
so
of
Trump,
are. Yeah.
So Trump embellishes. He lies. He tells half truths. And to say that he's the dumbest?
Well, I think that.
Get away with it. And then to point at LeBron James and say that Don Lemon is smart enough to make LeBron James look smart? Come on, don't believe Trump. Trump is playing y'all.
No.
He's playing you every day of the week.
No, Trump said Don Lemon is so dumb he makes LeBron James look smart because he's the dumbest
That's
man
what I'm
in television.
Saying.
Yeah,
it's,
right.
But I'm saying that Don Lemon has to be smart enough to make somebody look dumb. That's all I'm saying. And so for Trump to put this dumb stuff out there.
He's making
and
somebody look smart,
people on the
not
right.
Dumb. Yeah, he's making LeBron James
you're
look
missing
smart,
my
not
point.
Look dumb.
You're missing my point. But for Trump to put that out there in such a – and he always says that. Maxine Waters is low IQ. But when it comes to people like Hillary Clinton, she's a criminal, whatever you call her, crooked. You know,
you would rather
he attacks
call Don
black
Lemon
people
crooked?
With their intelligence. He attacks black people with their intelligence, but he attacks everybody else, Little Marco, all these other people that look more like him. Not in an intelligent or being them being less intelligent.
Trump is using the right.
So you rather him refer to Don Lemon as a criminal that you would support.
I rather Trump grow up.
Okay.
Well, Trump, wait, you guys, and we need to applaud President Trump because he did exercise restraint when he got to Ohio. He doubled down. He did not double down on LeBron James. He left the LeBron James issue on the bench. And instead, he talked about the Heat.
This room was not designed quite for this crowd. And you people are hot. So much for my brand new beautiful suit.
He was there campaigning for Troy Balderson. Is that correct? correct?
Balderson versus O'Connor. Yeah. This is a bellwether seat tomorrow. 40 years that's been in Republican hands. And there's a full court press on for Republicans to hold that seat for, you know, based on the idea of losing a seat that's been in Republican hands for 40 years in Ohio, swing state that, of course, Trump won.
And he won there by 11 points in that district.
Right. And so you're worried about that becoming even more energy or producing more energy on the left were a seat like that to fall 90 days out. So that's why Trump is in Ohio putting his stamp on that race. And we'll see how that goes.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy talking about Trump servicing the public by providing tweets on the Fourth Estate, so he argues. Tony in Palos Heights here on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan. Hi, Amy. I just got a quick comment to make. I was watching that speech Friday night, and
in Ohio.
I couldn't believe, in Ohio, right, and in that hot, small venue, and the president was sweating profusely, and I couldn't believe that he didn't have a couple of bottles of water up there for him, or somebody didn't bring any water. The guy's in his 70s, and he's standing up there for an hour and a quarter or so, hour and 20 minutes, and all revved up, and he didn't get to take a drink of water. I can't believe that somebody wouldn't think of, you know, give him a bottle of water to drink there.
Yeah, where was Marco Rubio with the water?
I was worried about him.
All right, thanks for the call,
Tony.
Well,
he looked
fine.
I mean, he was spry. He was energized. He was talking about Jim Jordan.
What a great defender he's been. What courage. I'll tell you what, there's a brave, tough cookie. I don't want to wrestle him. He's tough.
Nobody wants you to wrestle him, Mr. President.
Yeah, and Jim Jordan doesn't want to wrestle you either. Because that would not end well.
No.
But yeah, no, he was sweating a lot. It was a hot box in there.
We'll talk
to...
Can
we get some air conditioning in here?
Well, it's not the first sauna he's been in.
Yeah.
You know. You should have just gone up there with a towel.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. You married the wrong person, but it's okay, and I'll explain why.
Well, no, duh.
Well... I don't know.
Did I say that?
I don't know if that no duh is going to hold up.
Just swinging by Lollapalooza. I'll be right over to pick up the kids.
This piece from Alain de Botton.
It's Alain de Botton.
Author of The Course of Love in New York Times. Why you will marry the wrong person. The problem is that before marriage, we rarely delve into our complexities.
Right. You have to love yourself. Excuse me. You have to love yourself before you can love another.
It's the greatest love of all. Thank you, Whitney Houston. Whenever casual relationships threaten to reveal our flaws, we blame our partners and call it a day.
And you can't change them. They have to want to change themselves.
Boy, you are just really at the ready with the pithy aphorisms.
It's a little rhetoric 101.
Yeah.
These are basic tools that you need to have in the shed.
Cliches. Great.
Go on. I can't wait for you.
Our partners are no more self-aware. Naturally, we make a stab at trying to understand them. We visit the families. We look at their photos. We meet their college friends. All this contributes to a sense that we've done our homework. We haven't. Marriage ends up as a hopeful, generous, infinitely kind gamble taken by two people who don't know yet who they are or who the other might be, binding themselves to a future they cannot conceive of and have carefully avoided investigating. Sign me up. Sounds like fun.
Is this another edition of...
Time now for another reason why... Dan Proft is single!
What matters in marriage... is the feeling that two people are drawn to each other by an overwhelming instinct... and know in their hearts that it's right. That's in the marriage of feeling. It's kind of like the romantic version, which is a problem.
This is kind of uncomfortable.
You know my position on romance.
Oh, yeah.
I'm opposed to it.
Yes, you are. 100%.
Indeed, the more imprudent a marriage appears, the safer it can feel. Recklessness is taken as a counterweight to all the errors of reason, the catalyst of misery that accountants demand. The prestige of instinct is the traumatized reaction against too many centuries of unreasonable reason.
Well, why do people get married? Let's break this down. Because some women are getting older and they want to make sure they can have kids.
There's perhaps a loneliness catalyst. Mm-hmm.
Perhaps a feeling of wanting to be on a team.
We marry to make a nice feeling permanent. We imagine that marriage will help us to bottle the joy we felt when the thought of proposing first came to us.
Do you know that love is patient and love is kind?
I've heard that. Thank you.
How many marriages have you been to that you know it is not going to work
out? How many
out?
Weddings?
I mean, how many weddings have you been to where you know when they're walking down the aisle, that's not going to work? And you know when they say, if anyone thinks these two should not be married,
I always object.
Oh.
Do you think you married the wrong person? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. There's a kicker here, and the kicker is, the good news is it doesn't matter if we married the wrong person, says Alain Botton.
Is she friends with Macron?
We mustn't abandon him or her, Amy.
I'm not the one.
Only the founding romantic idea upon which the Western understanding of marriage has been based the last 250 years, that a perfect being exists who can meet all our needs and satisfy our every yearning. We need to swap the romantic view for a tragic and at points comedic awareness that every human will frustrate, annoy, anger, madden, and disappoint us, and we will do the same to them. Yeah.
Dan.
The philosophy of pessimism, of which I am an adherent, offers a solution to a lot of distress and agitation around marriage. The failure of one particular partner to save us from our grief and melancholy is not an argument against that person, and no sign that a union deserves to fail or be upgraded. The person who is best suited to us is not the person who shares our every taste, but the person who can negotiate differences in taste intelligently. Rather than some notional idea of perfect complementarity, it is the capacity to tolerate differences with generosity that is the true marker of the not overly wrong person. Compatibility is an achievement of love. It must not be its precondition. Romanticism has been unhelpful to us. You need a little pessimism in your relationship, and it sets everything right.
This brought to you by, on a very special, Dan and Amy. Taking your calls, 312-642-5600.
You married the wrong person. I just explained why. Because you were tethered to this silly-hearted view of marriage, Amy. But
don't give up, Dan, doesn't work out.
That's right.
Sometimes you don't have a choice. Sometimes they just leave.
Okay. Greg in Schaumburg.
Okay, this topic I know.
Uh-oh.
And your article. No, I really do. It's like a morning promo code, Amy. but anyway. All right, here's what your story, the article that you have just quoted,
yes,
misses, and this is the absolute key. That relationships by design are never going to meet each other's needs while we're on Earth. And difficulties will come. And God gives us those difficulties to grow us. And it's the difficulties when they are, in fact, irresolvable. That if there is an irretrievable bond between those, or, you know, unbreakable bond between those individuals, and they put their trust in Christ in order to resolve it, you ultimately do see the wisdom of why God put you together in the first place.
Did you write your own vows, Greg?
Yes.
I bet.
Okay. Yeah. Do you remember
and
what you
By the way, this
said?
What you just said, this is a secular version of what you just said.
I know it is.
But you're right. You're right about that. Yes.
You remember the vows that you took?
The reason why it's flawed, Dan.
Yeah, I hear you. I agree.
Greg, do you remember any part of your vows?
Did you say love is patient and love is kind? Please tell me you didn't.
No, I have them actually memorized, but I won't give you the
Greg,
verbatim.
Greg, here's what I want you to do. Greg, think of me as your betrothed, and I want you to...
I can't do that.
I want you to propose to me all over again. Like it's our first date.
No.
We're on a windswept plane, Greg. You're on bended knee, and you say to me...
I said in a Catholic mass, looking at my wife, essentially the following points. It was in Cincinnati. We were on our way to Chicago, and I said, we've been given the gift of many opportunities in life, but there will come difficulties, and the key will be if we are able to resolve them, always being dedicated to Christ. That's essentially what I said.
Oh, that's lovely.
And when did you get divorced?
19 years later.
Well...
thanks for the call, Greg.
You're a good man,
Appreciate
Greg.
It.
Don't let one woman define you. Jeez,
I think it was still a little raw for Greg. We know Greg for a long time.
But you know what? I can tell in the emails he sent, it's still very personal for him.
Well, he's a God-fearing man.
I know. Gosh, let's see who's online too.
I'm a jackass. That's right.
Oh, goodness.
Come on.
Well, I don't want to. I mean, Greg, you're in our purse.
Get over it already. Bruce in Bloomingdale.
Good morning, guys. Dan, the thought of you dying miserable, old, and alone, surrounded by cats, bothers me on a fairly superficial level.
And a full complement of seven irons from various sets of clubs.
Love, I've discovered in 58 years on this planet, and now on what I like to call my final wife, after a very expensive practice wife, that love is when your own happiness is intrinsically bound up with the happiness of another. And when you realize that, you know that in spite of all the crap that goes on from day to day and the fact that you're going to tick each other off at times, you're not going to be happy if that other person isn't happy, and you just can't be happy by yourself.
That's sickening.
As simple as I can put it.
That is just a sickening philosophy on life.
No,
I
that
can't
is
abide
a beautiful
that.
Thing.
All right, thanks
have
for
a
the
great day,
thanks
guys.
For the call.
He has
Bruce.
Something
Appreciate
unique
it.
And genuine. Good for him.
Yeah. To be other regarding like that.
Oh. No, that your happiness is not predicated on the other person's happiness. It's tied to it in a more intrinsic manner. Don't you see?
Yes. Thank you for repeating what he just said back to me. That's very helpful.
I did it. Women speak.
Kent and Aurora.
Yeah. 12 years ago, I thought I married the right woman. And hi, Helen. But over the last couple months, listening to an internet, celebrity, I've come to realize that I didn't, because I am not married to Jordan Peterson.
You should have married Jordan Peterson. Yeah. Yeah.
If I would have married Jordan Peterson, everything would be awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Ken. By the boards, you know.
Wow.
Here's something else, though, too. It's key. It's summer wedding season, don't you know? Is it? Sort of still.
Yeah. A lot of weddings in September, October.
Yeah, it is to the Wall Street Journal,
going
at least.
Going to one in November.
You know, it's in big demand for weddings this season.
What?
Star Wars. Star Wars figures. I mean, not the actual figurines. I mean, people coming to your wedding as Darth Vader.
See, that's just so weird.
The 500.
What are we, at Comic-Con?
The 501st Legion is a group of more than 13,000 fans in about 60 countries that often dress as bad guys, including stormtroopers, imperial gunners, and Darth Vader himself. Now that's some wedding music right there.
That's what it should be.
This is so goofy.
The members, who are divided into more than 100 regional groups known as garrisons, create their own props and costumes in exact detail and service local events at no fee. That'll spice up your wedding.
I had a Herky the Hawkeye come once. That was fun.
Oh, that worked out.
We played the fight song and everyone cheered, and it was amazing.
That was at your first wedding?
No, at a friend's wedding.
Oh.
Herky came in and I was all,
see
the picture. It's on Twitter.
Who, did you have any
relations with Herky? No.
I wasn't going to ask that. I don't know why you went there. That's not what I was going to ask. Did you have any, you know, any novelties at your practice wedding with your practice husband?
With the first guy? No, I didn't. Nothing. Hmm. Nothing out of the ordinary. Very straight-laced. Hmm. I let the bridesmaids wear whatever they want. Just wear black.
Well, if you do it again, you know, just keep the 501st Legion in mind.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Very sad news over the weekend. Did you hear who passed away? Mrs. Garrett.
A woman who practically raised me.
You remember?
Now the world don't That's not Mrs. Garrett.
That's Miss Garrett's signature show.
Well, she did Different Strokes first, and then they did the spinoff Facts of Life.
This is the signature show.
Oh, okay.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have the facts of life. The facts of life. There's a time you gotta grow and show you're growing. Now you know about the facts of life. The facts of life. When the world never seems to be living up to your dreams, and suddenly you're finding out the facts of life are all about you.
She was 92?
Yeah, she was. Charlotte Ray.
Let me guess, you identified as Joe.
Yes, exactly. Not the blonde.
The tomboy. I identify as Blair.
Well, what about Tootie?
I like Tootie, too.
They're bringing it back.
Did not like Natalie.
Yeah, she was evil.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Excuse me. This is an interesting story of the weekend. I don't know if you saw it. Cambridge math professor who is one of four joint winners of the Fields Medal, which is like the Nobel Prize in math, had it stolen from him about a half hour after it was awarded to him. This happened in Rio de Janeiro, which, as you recall, was selected over Chicago for the 2016 Olympics because of safety concerns here. And those safety concerns appear to be well-founded after another weekend of carnage on Chicago streets. 63 shot, 10 murdered.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers are staggering. It is one of the worst weekends we've ever had here in the city.
There's such a genocide in our community that is driving me absolutely bonkers. I don't want to do any marches. I just want people to cooperate and let kids live.
So after 63 shot, 10 dead, the blame game has begun. Was it the weather? What is it?
What I promise you is that we won't be defeated. I mean, I promise this city that we won't be defeated. We won't be overrun.
That's Police Chief Fred Waller, who came out and spoke with the media. Of course, every politician was at Stroger Hospital because Sunday morning yesterday, it was a bit of a mess, people waiting to find out if their loved ones were dead or alive.
We have a challenge, and it requires all of us, not just our police officers.
That's the wrong soundbite. But people were out there wondering what was going on with their loved ones. So Congressman Danny Davis, others, Alderman Walter Burnett stopped by.
We still don't do enough to control the flow of guns, especially automatic weapons.
So automatically they're blaming guns and not the people who have the guns.
So let's see, we've tried an anti-police consent decree. We've tried a ban on handgun ownership in this city. Let's see, we've tried more money for schools. We've tried more money for public housing. We've tried enterprise zones and
midnight basketball. We've tried
subsidies for businesses to locate in particular areas. There's any number of after school programs and youth at risk oriented programs.
Well, Mayor Emanuel is suggesting we need more jobs. That would have stopped the violence this weekend.
On Wednesday, we announced a number of businesses that were going to be part of the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund that create the most important part of our neighborhood economy. But we together have to work as a city. We have a challenge, and it requires all of us, not just our police officers.
Okay, what can we do? I'm willing to help. What does he need?
If it was 10 dead and 63 shot and in one place at one time, what would we be talking about? What would the coverage be? But because it was 10 murdered and 63 shot in a few neighborhoods over 72 hours, you know, we kind of go through the same motions with everybody reciting the words that have become all too familiar. And those in charge are not held accountable. The belief is that somehow Tiny Dancer and the other potentates in the city are on your side of the skirmish line. The media and the politicians, they're with you. Is that the way you feel? They're on your side of the skirmish line fighting out against the violence? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
During a 2.5 hour period, 25 were shot in 5 multiple injury shootings, and a paramedic, Dan, described it as a war zone out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's been described as a war zone. I mean, didn't we just have a movie called Chirac
that
Spike Lee did?
Awful. Most of the shootings happened in the 6th, 10th, and 11th district, and in the 6th district, officers responding to a shooting in the 10th, and once they left that block party, 8 were shot at the block party in Lawndale.
Mm-hmm.
They said as if they were waiting for police to leave, and that's when 17-year-old girl shot in the face, killed. An 11-year-old shot. He's going to live.
So you've run the list of the things that we've tried and the people who have tried them. So what do you think should be done, or should we just kind of, you know, pay our respects and say this is bad and then move on and move away? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Arlene on the northwest side.
Hey, good morning. Danny Davis should have stopped before you said the word guns. We do not do enough. What is he doing? I had a friend when I was working, and she happened to live in that neighborhood, and she said, boy, Arlene, I wish I could go home and, like you, it's quiet out there. She said, when I go home, all I hear is arguing, fighting, police cars, fire department coming. I can't get any sleep. I said, well, why don't you move? She said, no, my family is there. And I said, well, you know what we do here? We try to work in our neighborhood and make things better. We help each other. And that's not, if Danny Davis would go, I think we should all go to George Soros, because I think he is actually part of this deal, the media, making these kids heroes that shoot other. And it's the good kids that die. It's not. Well, for the most part, gang members, yeah, they do, when they aim right, they will get each other. But it's the culture. It's what's going on there. And I saw one time a report, two apartments, one over the other, that the second story was clean as a whistle. The first floor, they were showing how the poor kids are laying on urine-soaked mattresses. No one's taking care. Well, that could be the answer. Hey, let's pay these people, really, to go out and help each other and show them there's a different way.
Okay, thanks for the call, Arlene. What about the Illinois oligarchs? What about the people in charge? In this discussion, I rarely, rarely hear the names Madigan and Cullerton and Burke and others invoked. You hear Tiny Dancer because he's the mayor. Not that anybody's really serious about it, holding him accountable. I mean, I don't really buy it that people are serious about it in Chicago. I mean, where the real weight is. I hear, you know, a lot of people, they don't like him for all kinds of obvious reasons, but I don't hear a lot of people talking seriously about doing anything about it. I mean, the kind of you know, land of misfit toys collection of people running against him, notwithstanding. What about the other oligarchs, the robber barons? I say those who have conferred unto themselves generational wealth by producing generational death. And by the way, that goes for all of the accomplices who continue to prop them up and keep them in power. So all of you dyed-in-the-wool Illinois Democrats, tell me your position on the ongoing carnage in Chicago. 100 years of your rule. Madigan, Cullerton, Tiny Dancer, Daley before him. And, you know, go down the list of Chicago mayors, obviously. Ed Burke, the venerated Ed Burke in Chicago, where all the power resides and all the money has been made. Generational wealth for generational death. How do you square that with your social justice agenda? How do you square that with your concern for minorities? You know, your virtue signaling concern. Those Wrigleyville goofs. I'm not talking about the marchers. I'm talking about the Cubs fans. That's it. You know, we're with you in spirit there, so protest marchers. Of course, because you're a lakefront liberal who is going to the Cubs game. And so you'll tip your cap to the protesters and they'll dissipate and go back to their neighborhoods. And you'll get on with your life and you'll continue to vote for the same people and maintain the same power structure and pretend that you're not complicit. That you're not a supporter of the robber barons, the oligarchs, the barbarians, that you're not a proponent of racist policies in the most segregated city and violent city in the country. Where, and we're going to ask Greg Livingston at the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour, when do we have the protest march against white liberals and the Chicago Democrat power structure? Because I'll be at that march. When do we push that conversation? And when do you push it on your neighbors? The champagne socialist that you live around in Lakeview, Amy, and that all of you know at some level within your social circles.
They're not voting for Mayor Emanuel, I can tell you that.
Yeah, congratulations. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Who
big deal.
Who are they going to vote for?
I don't care. They're going to vote for some other hack. It's an extension of the same. And what are they going to do for state legislative candidates? And what are they going to do statewide? Same power structure.
Well, we rarely have anybody even running against Cullerton.
Yeah, that's a real profound
and
defense
Williams.
Of their dyed-in-the-wool support for the established power structure that is responsible for the carnage. It's their school system. It's their housing projects. These families and neighborhoods are wholly owned subsidiaries of the government. And that's what the Democrats like. But they don't like the outcomes. Well, if you support the inputs, you're responsible for the outputs.
Here's a text message. Declare war on the gangs and send in the military to eliminate them like we would do to ISIS if they set up shop in Chicago.
It's idiotic and it's tired. That's the conservative, not even conservative because I'm a conservative. That's like sort of the other side to the, you know, ban guns. Send in the military, send in the National Guard. No, let's not. It's not the military's fault. It's not the National Guard's problem. This is a domestic policing problem. This is a local problem. Edward and Homer Glenn.
Hi. Hey, I listen to your show every day, guys. And I was wondering, who pays for all the costs, all the gunshot wounds, the hospital bills on those, the millions of dollars that are spent on those?
Taxpayers. Thanks for the call, Edward. It's called the Medicaid program. Art at Midway.
Yeah, I think what needs to happen is all 50 wards, we all need to go in there and block the aldermen from actually leaving their office until they get their work done.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Art. I like the instinct to lock them up, but I don't know about what work they're actually conducting in the office or how that we'll know when they've got it done, but I understand the frustration. John in Lincolnwood.
Good morning. I had to call in because you know what, the only way this is going to change, and Dan, you know this, as Amy and all of us do, is these people have to be voted out. I don't know how, and I don't know. They need to look in the mirror instead of just blaming guns. They don't ever blame themselves. I've never heard Rahm or Danny Davis or Burke or any of these guys ever blame themselves for any kind of policies that they put in, that all these kids and adults and whoever is getting shot. This is their fault.
Take it to the alley. Thanks for the call, John. Take it to the alley. Values. I mean, they like just spit out words, right?
Yeah.
Values. Oh, thanks. Yeah. Bill in the Southwest side.
Yes, first it starts at home. And then all these priests and so-called reverends, they should emphasize this. And a protest march should be in their neighborhoods. It starts at home. Curfew means curfew. They should be in a house and be raised properly, not by grandmothers. That's where it starts. Thank you for letting me voice my opinion.
Thanks for the call, Bill. There's no question it starts with family. And it also, you know, looking at these gangbangers that we don't care about when they kill each other and then others getting caught in the crossfire, and then we, you know, pay our respects, as I said, give the pro forma responses. But, I mean, you know, these kids that are, these kids didn't come out of the womb as gangbangers.
No.
So.
Behavior.
So what's going on, right? And, yes, you can't legislate a loving two-parent family, but you can do more with respect to opportunity. You can do more with respect to the ready access to things like quality schooling that many of these kids in many of these neighborhoods do not have. And what have we done in furtherance of those things that we can do? I understand there are limits to what can be done from the outside, but there are things that can be done, and we haven't done those things. We haven't even tried them. The one thing that we haven't tried in Chicago and Illinois, we've tried everything. Everything other than, for lack of a better description, conservative reform policies. Everything other than pro-family, individual accountability policies. That's the one thing we resist at every turn. Okay. Mark in Plainfield.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. First, I'd like to wish both you and the listening audience happy Atomic Bomb Day. Should be a federal holiday. As far as this issue goes, you know, how do you, you just said conservative reform policies, and how do you enforce that? I think you need a section of military or martial law and just go in there and sweep these people up, whether it's local police or National Guard or whatever. But you need a force stronger than the gangbangers and a force willing to use it.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mark. We have a civilian political authority that doesn't back the police. So we'll have, a National Guard sweep, and then things will go back to the way they were before, and what changes? You're just rinsing and repeating the same generational death march, aren't you? And it's just easy salute, you know, just kind of easiness. Just wipe them out. Just round them up. Nonsense. It's nonsense. It's idiotic. Chip in St. Charles.
I really enjoyed Alderman Burnett talking about the proliferation of guns, and he doesn't hold the people doing the shooting accountable for anything. And if you're not gonna do that, then everything you say is a joke. And the other thing is 3D printed guns are now the thing, and the gun proliferation isn't going to matter anyway, because whenever you need a gun, you just print one out that afternoon and you're ready to go. What are they going to do about that?
Thanks for the call, Chip.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy continuing our discussion on Chicago violence against the backdrop of the mayoral election in February and maybe to April. There's a runoff, as well as all the aldermanic elections. And then you've got, obviously, state legislative and statewide elections in November. These are all relevant. Policymakers are relevant. Who's in charge is relevant. 10 dead and 63 shot over the weekend. And the calls are very familiar. The quote-unquote solutions, and I do say that in quotation marks, very familiar, haven't borne out. The protests will go on because sort of they've been encouraged through lack of prevention, I suppose. First with Flager, the flack for Rahm on the Dan Ryan, and then last week on Lakeshore Drive with Gregory Livingston, Reverend Gregory Livingston, who's the president and founder for the Coalition of a New Chicago, who suggested after the march that the arterial roads to O'Hare may be next on their hit list. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by the aforesaid Reverend Greg Livingston. Greg, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Dan, Amy. Good morning to you guys.
Good morning. So how do you think the march fared in terms of what you hope to achieve?
Well, we knew the march would not be an actual anti-violence mechanism, but the purpose of it is to create leverage. You mentioned elected officials, the governmental officials, and even the candidates. You know, if you're going to run for those offices, you know, you should really speak honestly to the people about, you know, the direness of the situation. I think now it's 63 shot, 11 dead, right? Somebody else died.
Okay.
I heard on the news this morning. And but we need to have a real open and frank talk about this with all of the, you know, we don't need crocodile tears. We don't need any of that. And I'm not saying that monetizing the solution is being the situation is the solution, but you got to spend some money in these areas. You know, can I give you real quick? I was suited up the other day and, you know, suit and tie. A little girl was with her mom. I was in the hood. She was about 3 or 4 years old. Little girl looks at me and says, "Mommy, he's DCFS." Well, I won't lie, I was shocked when the young child said that. I said, look at her worldview already. How do you move this child from looking at a black man with a suit on as being DCFS to that it's okay to see a black man with a suit on? So not into the blame game at all, Dan, just saying that the situation is rough, man. It's ugly. It's ugly.
So at your march on Thursday, there were a lot of different groups that were present. I mean, I saw somebody say Puerto Rico make it a 51st state. I saw death sentence for Jason Van Dyke and that no more Trump and Pence, get them out of office. Would you say that that march was organized or was a little chaotic? Or how would you describe it? I know, and I'm thankfully no one was arrested, no one. There's no reports of any damage done to any buildings, so that's good. But how would
I did try to get arrested, but they wouldn't arrest me.
Yeah.
But I was
nobody gets arrested anymore.
Come on, right, man? I mean, so
well, how
fun.
Did you try and get arrested? Were you one of them who wanted to go back on a Lakeshore Drive?
No. We got to Wrigley Field. They had a steel barricade.
Yeah.
And I told the officer, if I step over this, will you arrest me? And he said, please don't do it. I said, I'm going to step over. So I lifted up my leg. And to step over it, and then one of the officers came and he grabbed me and he whispered in my ear, please don't do that because the marchers will get violent if we arrest you, you know. And he says, and we really can't. So I said, oh, okay. And really, I didn't want, it was peaceful, and I didn't want people to go off. But to answer your other question, it was organically organized. We had all kind of people out there. And it takes a certain kind of person to come to a protest march like that anyway. Because I really feel you need unreasonable people for unreasonable situations. Individuals that say, you know what, we have to do something. They bring their agendas, that's fine. But we take their agendas and their interests and we try to shape them into something called a route, which is the route for the march. So, you know, still to carry the message forward.
Well, to carry the message forward, Trump and Pence, I'm sorry, what do they have to do with anything? Especially to the exclusion of, yes, you had the Rahm resign chance, and I appreciate those. But Madigan and Cullerton and Burke and the Chicago Democrat power structure and all of the black politicians on the city council and in Congress and the state legislature When is there going to be a bit of a reckoning for them? When are their names going to get called out? When are you going to march on up to the, you did the lakefront with Wrigleyville, but to the North Shore and all of the Champagne socialists and white liberals, who many of whom made millions of dollars with these the government takeover of black neighborhoods in the city of Chicago. When is the reckoning? When are those names going to be called out? When are they going to be held up for public effigy the way they should be, in my opinion?
Oh, you make a great point. I've been trying to change the mindsets, because a lot of the people, they were with us. Some of them had never been to that part of town before, right? They consider that to be traveling a long distance. And many of them never leave their neighborhood. So I had to kind of get this into their minds. I'm like, look, people travel from the South to Washington, D.C. for the 1963 march. And the travel is possible. I mean, this is a real practical issue, Dan. I'm going to be very, very honest with you. This is just one in a series of things we're trying to do. Like I said before, I've learned more from my failures than I have from not trying. One of the things that I've learned is that we have to keep hitting this in a strategic manner, and we are going to go after those that have a responsibility and make them accountable for what has to be done. But the real thing here is one of the real issues is that we have to keep the fire kindled. We have to keep it going, because people who have been hurt over and over again, sometimes it's awfully hard for them to believe and have hope and that things can change when they've experienced it at a very, very low level in their lives.
When you say when you say more money's got to be spent. Where? How? By whom?
I wish we could. What I would like to do is to have some kind of corporate governmental alliances where some of these old school buildings that were closed, or buildings or factories, whatever the neighborhoods, are converted into something. And I'm really a big believer in this, into digital training centers. You know, this is the 21st century. Technology is normative to these kids and everything. And then by the same token, you're able to hire people out of the community into these places. And it is just, it's, but it's no political will to do that. I talked to Ron or Antrim about that about 2 years ago. And so, you know, and I've learned from 2 years to now that we need some leverage. And see, by the time election time comes around, we could possibly make those guys so radioactive that their own people won't want to deal with them. So, and this is something that, man, nobody wants to do this, but like a surgeon, we may have to cut, and you know, in order to help our city.
Well, what's on the docket? What's your next plan? What are you going to shut down the Kennedy Expressway or a road into O'Hare, the I-90 there? What's your thoughts?
Well, we're still talking about it, because that's a big logistical piece, right? So we're talking about it and trying to pull all the pieces together. But the biggest thing is we're interested in how they respond to us, because, you know, they allowed the Dan Ryan Expressway, and that's federal, and to stop the ingress egress of traffic at O'Hare, that's federal. So what's the difference? I want to see what they're going to say. What's the difference in the two?
Well, I don't know what the difference would be. I mean, they've sort of conceded the point. What about the one of the things that you said? I saw one of the clips from the march about the police and about essentially like police de-escalation. And help me square the circle on, you want these neighborhoods that are shooting galleries right now to be safer. You want the law-abiding to be protected, which is obviously the majority of the residents in these neighborhoods, these violent neighborhoods. But you want some sort of police de-escalation. So what does that mean?
Sometimes in the hood, you know, first of all, I'm pro police. You know, take all the police out of Chicago and see what happens, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes in the hood, when you know, I grew up in the hood. You know, I had a nephew get shot in the head. You know, all this kind of stuff, and things can get very, for lack of a better term, randy in the hood, man. And everybody is pressurized. You know, everybody is on edge. The cops, the residents. Someone was saying, you know, why would you run when you see a cop? I said, well, when you're a black kid, that's part of your training. You know, police run. Shoot, I grew up next to the Southside Irish. You know, they would run too. You know what I mean? So it's just part of being a kid and you doing things and mischievous and all that. But also in this age with the gunfire, the gunplay, and things like that. You know, there really has to be another kind of mindset, because sometimes I question, you know, what the psychological tests are at the police academy, you know, because they have a stressful job, man. And sometimes they can come awfully hard at you. And the on the other side, you have these black men. I'm going to use black men on purpose, who already, you know, we have some issues. And in terms of, you know, are you disrespecting me? Because, you know, the, one of the big things is people wouldn't think that a black 15-year-old would stand up to a cop and eye him down with disrespect issues, man. But that's reality.
Yeah, but okay. But I'm sorry to interrupt, Greg, but here's the thing.
That's
you,
okay.
You want, I mean, I get police have a higher duty to try to de-escalate and defuse situations. I get that. And I understand what you're saying about being pro-police. And I've known you for a long time, so I believe that. You're a reasonable guy, a thoughtful guy, which is why I like you, even when I disagree with you. But here's the thing. What about responsibility to change that instruction that you're getting as a young black kid? There is no winning a confrontation with police. You are not going to come out of that better. Now, if the police mistreat you in some way, there are judicial remedies for that. Why not that being the approach and the education of young black men vis-a-vis the police? Because this antagonism with police doesn't serve the police interest, but it also doesn't serve young black men's interest either. So why not break that cycle?
Well, we want to break that cycle. That's why I mentioned the young girl saying, look, mommy, he's DCFS. We need to implement some new education models that can deal with the damage, the historical cultural damage that is in our neighborhood, that is in our community. So we need to implement these models. And that's what we're going to be talking about, you know, repurposing these schools to a purpose that really hits at, you know, some of the needs of the people there, you know, training, but also to have some classes to really be able to unpack some things for people, to give them tools, critical thinking tools, right, and the like. So we need a new education model. So we need, you know, we have the bureaucracy of CPS, you know, the idiocy of our mayor when it comes to education and challenged neighborhoods. And so, you know, just like, again, it's hard to get to a 15-year-old when he's been thinking this way since he was came into the world. I mean, it's just hard. We have to implement some real structural changes in the education model that maybe what is good in Lincoln Park educationally cannot be the same model in Austin or in Lawndale or in Inglewood. And we have to really work on that. And I think that'll make a difference as well, changing that mindset.
What about the conversation in the direction of black politicians who want to, you know, blame guns because they've got nothing else to say? They're tethered to that talking point. What about a conversation and education in the community about what government domination of our lives has generated in terms of family structure, in terms of the quality of K-12 education at the local school level, in terms of housing? What about the whole kind of taking table scraps in exchange for freedom? Effectively, in exchange for independence in these neighborhoods. What about that conversation? What about that tough conversation?
That requires us, Dan, to build a real organization that can affect, you know, these 19, 20 wards or whatever, and to have some real impact in terms of how they receive their campaign money and things of that nature, and to really shine a light into that darkness. Because right now, if they're prospering in the darkness, and so we have to build a light that's powerful enough, you know, in order to get them roaches out, man, you know. And it's but I'm committed to it. The people I'm working with, you know, some of my guys, Reverend Ackley and Reverend Hatch, and people like Eric Russell, we're committed to it. It's just not easy, you know. Dr. King started in 1955. With Rosa Parks and Civil Rights and the Voting Rights Act didn't kick in until 10 years later. So, you know, we're really trying to do some real, you know, acute and chronic long-term planning, you know, because we got to get this done. It's enough, you know.
Well, I definitely encourage you to keep agitating, and at least you're somebody out there challenging the established power structure in the city. So good on you for that. He's Greg Livingston, Reverend Greg Livingston, president and founder of the Coalition for a New Chicago. Greg, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mastermind. I always appreciate it.
See you later.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app.
Just text the word APP to 64636 to download the app today.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Well, President Obama informally jettisoned blue-collar families in his 2012 election.
Oh, Saturday was Barack Obama Day, by the way. I don't know what you did to celebrate.
Barack Obama Day where?
In Illinois. It wasn't an official holiday, but it was just recognition.
Oh.
You know.
Yeah.
I don't know what you did.
I went shooting, actually, to celebrate it, which is, I think, appropriate. And so he jettisoned white, blue-collar working families. And then it's been formalized in the intervening 6 years. The Netroots Nation Conference, as memorialized in The Atlantic, pointing out that five keynote speakers of color, all of whom underline the potential of a multiracial coalition of voters made up of African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, progressive whites, you know, under the tutelage of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And Marcos, the Daily Call's Marcos Moulitsas was on Meet the Press this weekend, and embracing socialism and the label.
You either embrace the label and own it and be a player, or you can be like Andrew Cuomo and be off in the sidelines irrelevant. That's where this is going. Because when you really look at what that so-called socialist platform is, and Nixon's right, they're going to accuse us of being communist before all is said and done. When you look at it, it's basically healthcare, access to education. I mean, these are things that people actually like. If you go down item by item, people actually want these things. Donald Trump may not. He doesn't want his taxes to go up. But everybody else kind of does. So I actually want to have that debate. Let them talk about what it means to be a socialist. We're not the party that's being bought and paid for by Russia. We want to talk about this, you know, the socialists. We are the party that is looking out for Americans and America.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Marcos, let's have that debate. I'm looking forward to it. I'll put up our folks against Cynthia Nixon and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. That's for sure. How will that play in Central Ohio? We're going to find out tomorrow. And for some insight on that and the political landscape generally, we're pleased to be joined again by Selena Zito, Washington Examiner reporter, New York Post columnist, CNN contributor, also the author of the new book, The Great Revolt, Inside the Populist Coalition Reshaping American Politics. Selena, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So they're stuck on socialist on the left side of the aisle. How does that play out, and how much should we take away from whatever the outcome is tomorrow in Central Ohio in that special?
Well, it's really interesting to watch, you know, this pitch left, a very far left for the Democratic Party, because it's exactly what we calculated and warned about in the Great Revolt, and looking towards what's going to happen not only in 2018 but 2020. The very one thing that we reported in the Great Revolt is that if this happens, this only strengthens and gives the opportunity for Trump to win again in 2020, and for the Republicans to hold on to more seats than maybe they possibly historically should, because the reaction by the Democrats to this new populist coalition is to go left. And so when you I was just in Ohio 12, it's counties surrounding Columbus, Ohio, for this special election. And you know, I mean, maybe I'm just seeing something different, but I certainly didn't see what a lot of people are predicting, which is a tight, close race between the Republican Balderson and the Democrat O'Connor. Now, Danny O'Connor, the Democrat that is running, is a moderate Democrat, but unfortunately, he has to then answer for the Democrats that have gone far left. And that doesn't help him because, you know, he sort of he stumbles, and, you know, he doesn't quite know how to, you know, sort of ditch the Democratic Party, but then not ditch it. So, you know, it's a problem that I think a lot of Democrats will have to face in November.
And what should their answer be? I mean, you just can be true to who you are, correct?
Well, I personally think that's the better thing to do. I think to, you know, Democrats and Republicans need to run to represent the districts that they live in rather than a national theme. But that doesn't seem to be the wisdom that a lot of them do, right? You know, I mean, even Republicans, you know, if your district is similar to the populism of Trump, then, you know, run what represents your district. Don't run as Donald Trump. And the same for Democrats. You know, if you are not a socialist, do not run as though you're going to be representing a Brooklyn, you know, a Brooklyn seat, and or even a Nancy Pelosi seat, which is San Francisco, right? If your district isn't that liberal and you want to win that seat, that's the last way you need to run as a candidate.
How do you receive, speaking of President Trump, how do you receive, because you think a little bit differently than the prevailing wisdom, such as it is in the D.C. press corps, how do you receive those tweets that Trump offers that target members of the D.C. press corps, name calling and criticism and allegations of fake news that have, you know, the likes of Maria Hinojosa at NPR suggesting that the D.C. press corps boycott White House press briefings, send the interns and don't cover any of the Trump rallies because that's not news. How do you receive this interplay between the president and the D.C. press corps?
Presidents have forever and a day not particularly cared for the way the press has covered them. Donald Trump, it just vocalizes what most of them thought. This is a different guy, and he approaches things in a different way. It doesn't change how I cover things. There was something that really just got under my skin over the weekend, where the D.C. press corps got their panties in a bunch, if you will, over the museum, which is a museum dedicated to news, selling fake news T-shirts.
Right.
And they, you know, they just, you know, took them to task and were just like so over the top outraged. And I responded and said, look, if you're going to, you can't be outraged over a T-shirt in your job. Like, you just
want one
can't.
Of those T-shirts.
In particular, if you're a member of the press, if that offends you, then you should get a different position, a different job. I mean, I didn't enter this job to be liked. 90% of the time, both sides of the aisle hate me, and that's like considered a normal day. You know, I don't understand that, and I don't understand just being all the dramatics and the smelling salts. I mean, just do your job.
Well, I mean,
you know,
it's,
I mean, I get threats all the time. I get abused all the time on Twitter. I get the worst emails and direct messages, but I don't advertise it, and I don't lose my mind over it. It's part of the job.
I don't even think it's so much. I mean, if I'm doing a little bit of armchair psychoanalysis here, I don't even think it's so much like these the threats that supposedly they're under are Jim Acosta being chanted at. I think it's the sense that they expect people to genuflect before them and hold them up to be the vanguard class that they think they are, speaking truth to power, being a check on power, when in point of fact, they often are acting as handmaidens to power, just not this president, that's all.
We're not in a different class. We're no different than anyone else, and I'll just leave it there.
Okay.
But some think of themselves as movie stars. I mean, they do. Some I know some reporters who tried acting. They couldn't get into acting, so they became reporters.
Sure.
I mean, it's pathetic.
Sure. Yeah. Let me ask you this about this piece that your colleague Byron York penned over the weekend in the Washington Examiner about the documents released, the Christopher Steele documents released on Friday, which, among other things, detail that Steele kept providing information to the FBI after his contractual relationship had ended, which is actually in contravention to FBI procedure. And he used Bruce Orr, essentially at the Department of Justice, whose wife was working for Fusion GPS, if we can follow all this, as a cutout, essentially, to communicate to the FBI. And, of course, Byron York, being the diligent journalist he is, you know, specifies the number of times there were meetings and communications and so forth that it revealed in these documents that were released. How important is the continued detailing of the interconnection between all of these Obama-era officials at Department of Justice and FBI and in the intelligence community and their violations of their own procedures? Also, somebody violated the law in unmasking Michael Flynn, which everybody has sort of forgotten about. How important is it to keep reporting on this to essentially act as a check on the legitimacy of the Mueller investigation?
Well, I mean, that's essentially that's her job. It's, you know, that kind of detailed reporting and connecting the dots and keeping power in check is an integral part of our job, not just the click of the moment, not just the gasp of the moment. I would argue those are the least important aspects of reporting. And what Byron is doing is critically important. And one of the few people that has consistently covered this with the detail that it deserves and needs.
The other question that this prompts, the Carter Page FISA document release, these documents on Friday, is, and you know, perhaps this requires more prodding from the media as well. Why won't President Trump use his power to declassify or release more information related to this investigation and lay it bare for the American public?
Right. I mean, you know, I think that's going to be the pressure going forward, right? I think that that's something that's important that he does. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's not something that he does do in the not too distant future.
All right. She is Selena Zito, Washington Examiner reporter, New York Post columnist, and CNN contributor. The book, The Great Revolt, Inside the Populist Coalition, Reshaping American Politics. Selena, thanks always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Take care.
She joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Mike. Oh, look at you munching on your gift.
Yeah, Mike Scott generously got me some saltwater taffy from his little jaunt over to Mackinac Island.
Yeah.
So I heard he was going, said, you got to get saltwater taffy, you go to Mackinac. From Joanne's Fudge, which I believe is J.B. Pritzker approved. And it's got like a little logo there, like a little Amish logo there. Because, you know, Mackinac Island's car-free, right?
Right.
Isn't it still car-free?
Yes,
yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And another place where it's car-free is on or in Colom, Michigan. Have you ever heard of it? They have a huge Amish community there. And, oh, yeah. All right. A Michigan man named Timothy.
Weird Al hasn't come out with anything new in a while. All right. Michigan Amish. What's the story?
Yeah, his name
there?
Is Timothy Hochstedler. Thank you. I pronounced his name right.
Okay.
And he's decided, you know what? This Uber thing's hot right now, so why aren't I an Amish Uber?
Uber is a cool thing. You know, every so many years, something new comes in. Uber's hot right now, so we can have the Amish Uber buggies and go and just deliver people to the front door steps.
At what point does your adoption of technology preclude you from continuing to be Amish?
Well, so here's the deal. He doesn't have a cell phone, so he's not technically registered to be an Uber driver, so I hope Rahm isn't listening to this, Rahm Emanuel.
Well, he's in Michigan.
I know, but still, his brother is hooked into the whole Uber thing. Here's the thing. Uh-oh. So you can't call on the cell phone and have a pickup. You have to wave flag him down, and every ride is $5. Doesn't matter.
Well, that's not really Uber. That's
yes, it is. It's Amish Uber.
First time Uber, and we're riding in a buggy.
And don't you know he has a horse named Morgan, and Morgan gives kisses like the puppy does to J.B. Pritzker.
He loves people. He's a Morgan. Morgan is a people's horse. They love doing their, you know, giving you a kiss or whatever, you know.
Right there on the
are
lips.
You, as a Amish, are you even allowed, as a Mennonite, are you allowed to conduct an interview using
the Mennonites,
a microphone?
That's weird, because when they told me there was sound or audio of the Amish Uber guy, I said, oh, no, because Mennonites in Iowa could not talk on camera.
And the
they
reason
could walk.
You,
they had a march.
Yeah. The reason you know is because you dated a Mennonite.
No, I didn't date him. They had a protest once, believe it or not, in Iowa. I don't know what town I was, Eastern Iowa.
Were they
and
protesting they, electricity?
No, I think it was the Iraq War. I can't remember. It was so cold out. It was just freezing. But they
sure, that's
walked
what you
by
take away.
And then they prayed, yeah. And then I had to make a package out of it. Which is speak for I had to do a story on it.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear what other people have to say.
Because I don't think there's Uber down here, so it's pretty cool. Like, it gives people that option that can't drive or don't want to drive or shouldn't drive.
So it's safe.
We have horse-drawn carriages on the Mag Mile.
Those are expensive. This is practical. $5 a pop.
Yeah, it's practical if you're going more than 2 miles. It's going to take you 4 hours to get there, but okay.
That's awesome. You could say that you rode with the Amish.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2, right before Joe Walsh at 5, on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We were talking to Selena Zito earlier, and she was talking about how unhinged the D.C. press corps was over Newseum having fake news T-shirts and, you know, the fainting spells and the need for smelling salts and the like. Well, you haven't heard unhinged until you heard Maria Hinojosa over the weekend. She's of NPR. She has a suggestion for what the D.C. press corps should do in response to President Trump and his tweeting. They're not going to take it anymore.
If, and I've said this on your show before, again, send the interns. It's great training to the press conference. If we completely, I mean, we as the media have got to start taking certain steps to communicate things. I think a letter, absolutely. But what if we just turned away? What if we didn't show? What if all of us just said, you know, for a whole week, we're not going to talk about one thing that comes out of the White House? I mean, it's radical. I know it's upsetting because we're just like, but this is not how we operate. But he is coming after us. Are we going to have to start talking about this after one of us has been killed? Is that it?
So apparently Trump is targeting members of the D.C. press corps for assassination. This is so unhinged, so it becomes so ridiculous and overheated that no less than Buffy the Vampire Slayer had to weigh in.
No, she's back.
Christy Swanson was on Greg Gutfeld's show on Fox talking about the media. She's a Hollywood actress.
So when they see CNN, they go, you, because that's their outlet. So am I wrong?
No, I don't think that that's wrong. But I think that your advice is actually good. The tough love, right? Because I do think, not to get technical on the polls, but he's leading women.
This is Dana Perino. I get the wrong clip there. Sorry. But ultimately, she said the media needs to take a chill pill.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they need to relax. They're a little ridiculous. Well, for more on the ridiculousness of the media from somebody who had to deal with it for quite some time, we're pleased to be joined by former White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer. His book, The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President, and he's in town Wednesday for a book signing here in Chicago that we'll be at, which should be heap big fun. Sean, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. What about that? Here's my reaction to Maria Hinojosa from NPR. I would agree with her. I would like the D.C. press corps to send the interns to the White House briefing because it would confirm or deny my suspicion that the questions and comments would be indistinguishable from the professionals who attend the White House briefings.
Well, I think that the thing that is interesting is that you've got this and I talk about this in the book, that there's a pack mentality that exists within the press corps, at least within sort of the elite Washington ones. But the thing that's interesting is that, and one of the reasons that I started to call on people, quote, in the back of the room, is that I think that there are a lot of voices that don't get captured in the briefing room. And that's, you know, not the, the business media, the urban media, the niche media, the conservative media. The problem is that you've got guys in the front couple rows that represent the big media conglomerates that all have the same question, that all want to perpetrate the same narrative. But what I think should be done more is kind of what I did in the past, which is you bring in local media through Skype, you call on folks. But part of it is that what you need to do is shake this up more and more and not let them try to dominate what the American people see and read and hear.
I remember when you were there and there was a woman who Skyped in from Montana, and she was concerned about border security. And I remember people, the mainstream media, they were laughing at her question. Do you recall
well, there was
that?
Often, I mean,
that was so rude.
And I, there was another person that I brought in that from out west who talked about land use, federal land use issues. And the media hated it because they didn't like their time, which is how they view it. It's theirs. Mm-hmm. And issues coming up that don't fit the narrative. There's one instance, Amy, that I write in the book where a reporter asked a question during a press conference about national security between Canada and the United States during a joint press conference between Justin Trudeau and our president. And the media went nuts on her because they thought that she should be asking questions about Russia that day. And so because she was asking about national security, her colleagues went nuts on her.
Oh, my God. Because it is an issue.
I wanted to ask you of your take on Sarah Huckabee Sanders' performance so far, somebody who followed you in that position as White House press secretary, particularly against the backdrop of how things got ratcheted up. I remember when you were sort of accosted somewhat gently, but accosted nonetheless at an Apple store. And that sort of was just the beginning of what's transpired since. And so her job, the job she's done as press secretary in the context of, you know, being thrown out of the Red Hen and the rest of it.
Well, look, I think that there's clearly, you know, it's interesting to hear some of the comments you played earlier with respect to the media, because there are folks that have been coming after us for a while. And I wasn't looking for a pity party, but I don't remember too much of the concern from the media about the safety of individuals, you know, who serve in the government and in this administration. But, you know, I think Sarah's doing a great job representing exactly what the president wants to get out there and his views. I know sometimes people don't like that she's the messenger, and they'll say, well, Sarah, don't you think? One of the things that you have to remember is that her job it's not about her. It's about the president. And for that reason, I think she does a good job of making sure that his views are articulated and known.
What did you think about Scaramucci? I mean, Anthony wasn't there, but I don't even think two full weeks, but what did you think of his short tenure there?
You know, I write about that in the book, Amy, that I have nothing personal against the guy. I just don't think that he had the qualifications, the background necessary to serve effectively in the role.
Yeah, I think that's more than a fair assessment.
Yeah, you know what? That's very nice.
let me ask you. So here's one of the things that everybody wants to know, and there's varying opinions on it, but few people are closer to the president than you. How the president processes advice and makes decisions. So as the press secretary, you're also a counselor to the president. You give him input and suggestions, recommendations, and then he processes all the advice he's getting and makes his decisions. But what's that like? Is there some structure to it? Is it somewhat whimsical? Does it depend on the day? What was that process like for you?
Well, you know, the big misnomer out there, Dan, is that that the president doesn't take advice or listen. In fact, nothing could be further from the truth. He seeks it. He welcomes it. But, you know, once he makes a decision, that's final. And what happens, I think, sometimes is the people who don't like the decision try to make it look like he, you know, didn't take their advice. But there's always two sides to an issue, and he sort of wants a robust debate among the folks that serve him to give him the best idea of what's in the best interest of the country. So he does take it, and he does welcome it, but ultimately he's going to decide which side of the issue he's going to come down on, and then he expects people to kind of follow through on that.
You were a political animal, of course, before being the White House press secretary. I remember actually a mayors and managers meeting for this company, Salem media where you were at in advance of the 2016 election, sort of handicapping the political landscape for us as a comm person at the RNC. And so, you know, you understand that bubble in D.C. very well. Do you think that Trump has been disruptive where he should be and essentially abiding norms where he should abide them? Or has it been sort of a bit of a mixed bag as he's learned the Beltway the way that you know it?
Well, look, I think in terms of what he came to do, he did he did and is doing. Meaning, you're right, he's disruptive. He's coming in and changing things up, not abiding by anybody's standards for what has to be done, but in fact doing it the way that he wants to get it done. So sometimes it doesn't always look pretty, and sometimes it may not be perfect from but I think he's doing exactly what he said he was going to do. And beyond just saying that, he's also getting results, and that's probably the bigger point.
Now, your tour, book tour, is causing some angst. I know that we were going to go to a certain restaurant. I don't know if we can say the name of the restaurant.
Public House.
To have your the meet and greet, and they did not. They were. I don't know if they're afraid of you, but they didn't want us there. So we're going somewhere else. We're going to Harry Carey's, but the one in Rosemont. But how have you responded to all this? I know that they canceled one of your signing events in Massachusetts, correct?
Correct. But you know what? I did an event yesterday in Toledo, Ohio, that had a few hundred people. It was fantastic. I was in San Francisco to a sold out event, of 400. Sacramento, we had another event up there with 500 people. All great events. Look, people have a right to express themselves. I respect that. But so far, we've had an outlet store in Massachusetts that canceled the event. You know, I think that's unfortunate because there's clearly demand. But we'll do what we have to get out there. And I think they're going to have a great event in Chicago on Wednesday.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. I think we're going to as well. Now, what has it been like sort of in quote unquote private life since you left the White House? Do you still get feedback when you walk around town, go to the grocery store and the like?
Yeah, generally it's pretty positive, though. I mean, people who disagree will come up and say, hey, I didn't vote for your guy, or I don't really support your side, but thanks for your service. And then there's just a lot of folks that are really positive. So I've had a very good reception since leaving the White House. Not all of it's positive, but at least it's been respectful and civil.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Good to hear.
Do you miss your job? Do you miss your
position? Do you miss Jim Acosta?
As White House Press Secretary?
No. I was honored to do the job, but I have not had one day where I look back and say, I wish I was there.
Mm-hmm. And in addition to the book, what's the future hold? Maybe a spot in the New York Times editorial board or something?
I don't know what that spot would be.
Yeah. That's right.
Although I was pleased, I will say, speaking of a spot, the book did make the New York Times bestseller list. So
congratulations.
You know, I was excited to get that. That's, thank you. That's one spot on the New York Times I'll take.
Right.
I've got a podcast that I launched called Everything's Going to Be All Right. I run a small consulting firm, and I've been just doing a series of projects that keep me extremely busy. The book itself, writing the briefing, took 6 months, and so that was a really intense period to get it done and make the deadlines that we had to make.
All right. He is Sean Spicer, former White House Press Secretary, author of the bestseller, The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President. He'll be in Chicago for a fun book signing event on Wednesday. Sean, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. We'll see you Wednesday.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Amy. Appreciate you guys.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Brian Urlacher inducted into the National Football League Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio over the weekend. And he really did a nice job with his induction speech. Recognizing the fans and the organization and his players, as well as those he played against.
But most importantly, his mama.
Yeah, his mom and his stepfather. Those were the especially poignant moments, I thought. Here's Urlacher on his mom and the work ethic she instilled.
I began working when I was 12 years old, pushing my lawnmower around town, mowing yards. And later on, working in the oil fields of Lovington. I went off to college, a lumber yard in Albuquerque. My mother definitely taught me the importance of learning my way. Mother, thank you. If it wasn't for you, I definitely wouldn't be here today.
And she'd since passed away, so he was talking about her, you know, post-mortem. But he loves his stepdad.
Fortunately for my mother and the three of us, when I was 12, she met the man I considered to be my real dad, Troy Leonard. If my mother wasn't a good enough example of an exemplary work ethic, now I had another one of my stepfather. My dad went to work every day at 5:30 a.m. in the oil fields of Lovington. Not once did he complain. My dad's here tonight. Troy?
I'm not doing it.
Troy, you're not only my father, you're not only my stepfather, you're my father. Thank you, Dad, for helping a young boy who needed direction and a role model, for coming into our lives when you did.
His
stepdads never get enough recognition, I don't think.
It was nice.
For him.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.